option of extending the time?
I'm not going to extend the time. We're going to extend it at 10 minutes for this break, though. So we'll go to 12:40. But board members, please, let's see if we can hear people's opinions and not state the same, make our same points over and over, please. Okay, so go ahead.
Emil Jarfer, followed by Corey Cunningham.
Let me begin by saying thank you for serving the state of Texas on this important board. I'm a faculty member. I've been teaching for 24 years. I've taught students from first grade through visiting professors at a Research One university. I have dozens of graduates that are in professional school and graduate schools in the sciences, specifically in biology. I myself was an NSF graduate fellow. I have a couple of patents, and I oversee general education evaluation at my university. I'm here to argue against changing the language. I think a key word is not strengths and weaknesses so much as critique. Critique is a more definitive word than evaluate. Evaluate can be taken to one side or the other. Critique forces both. I would ask you to consider how many conformists have been awarded Nobel Prizes, and how many conformists have been awarded patents. I was at Harvard a couple years ago in an institute there, and a business school professor, Dorothy Leonard, told the story, and I relate it to you because I'm a proponent of intellectual diversity, and I think we need language, we need standards that promote intellectual diversity. She was in the room with finance ministers in the continent of Africa. She said, I'm surrounded by incredible ethnic and cultural diversity, but we have a problem. We can't solve problems because these 30 to 40 people were all educated at the same six schools in Europe. They could not think a new thought. They had been taken down a particular place by their faculty members. If we codify conformity in science process education, rather than critical thought, we limit the next generation's ability to solve future problems, which will limit our state's productivity in a flat world. One key element of science education and college readiness is critical thinking. I find it interesting to be quoting somebody from a previous generation, quoted probably many times in the 60s. The surest way to corrupt the youth is to instruct him to hold in higher esteem those who think alike than those who think differently. Friedrich Nietzsche. As a university professor, I expect my students to evaluate science ideas and to become focused skeptics, not conformists. I teach my students to evaluate, to question ideas and appearances. I would remind you as well of other thinkers and how they have advanced us in science. Copernicus, Einstein. And one example I would bring to you that I find to be a profound thinker, Peter Mitchell, gave us the idea of chemiosmosis, the production of ATP from a proton gradient within chloroplast and mitochondria. He was seen as a wacko for 10 years, and finally he was recognized as a visionary. Now his ideas have been supported by others' investigations as well as his own, and they are in textbooks broadly. I urge you to keep language that makes good science happen in this state. And I would also say that good science is happening. I see it in the productivity of our state universities, our professional schools. I see it in my classroom from students coming out of Texas high schools that are well prepared from their pre-AP and their AP curriculum. And I see the evidence, at least in the students I have, of strengths and weaknesses being taught and those challenges being allowed. I could speak specifically to the text used in AP. Campbell and Reese uses disparaging language for any other viewpoints besides neo-Darwinian thought. And that's because I teach that textbook and I know what statements are actually made in that textbook. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Cargill. Did you hear my announcement? We want to limit our questions as much as possible.
Okay, yes, I did. Did you hear the earlier discussion that we were having about pseudoscience, and is that a problem with your students or discussing those with your students?
Pseudoscience is a claim that is made. Oftentimes, when philosophy enters into the discussion of science, philosophy is necessary to form a basis for our assumptions. And even the example of DNA sequence analysis has assumptions behind how we do it. You change the assumptions, you can change how that tree looks from the sequence that you have. The same gene in one organism can do a different function in another organism, and that is a question we have yet to answer.
Thank you.
Corey Cunningham, followed by Eric Hennepfer.
Good morning to everyone. My name is Corey Cunningham. I'm 17 years old. I am a public school senior in high school from Baytown, Texas, near the Houston area in Harris County. I want to begin by thanking everyone for your tireless efforts to mold the young minds of our state, and your work is greatly appreciated. Now, before I begin, let it be clearly established at this time that I intend in no way to impress my religious beliefs on anyone here this morning. I fully intend to defend and affirm what I believe to be the rights granted to every citizen by the Constitution. As a student of the public school system, I want to give you a little bit of outlook on what it is that we experience currently and what we can expect in the future. Included in the processes of the scientific method are the steps of forming a hypothesis and completing the testing and analysis of this hypothesis. Evolutionists today seem to desire some parts of this to be ignored. It is your responsibility to ensure that our young minds are developed to reason and analyze properly. Included in the analysis of any hypothesis would be the consideration of both the strengths and weaknesses of any given hypothesis or theory. My desire, and the desire of many teachers in the state of Texas, is that we will fairly allow the strengths and weaknesses of the theory of evolution to be taught and considered. It can be easily understood that anything less than this is nothing short of hypocrisy and would be a devout failure to the young minds of our state. Even Darwin himself stated that a fair result can be obtained only by fully stating and balancing the facts and arguments on both sides of each question. I implore you at this time to follow that requirement of the father figure of the theory of evolution. Now I would like to consider less of a scientific standpoint and more of a civil argument. The Constitution guarantees me the right to express my religious beliefs as surely as it guarantees anyone theirs to express evolutionary concepts. Clearly, the First Amendment guarantees freedom of speech, and also it says that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, it seems that some want this First Amendment avenue to be a one-way street. By stating that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, the Constitution prohibits also any law that prohibits religion or the free exercise thereof. If there are those who wish to believe and speak about their religious beliefs, they are absolutely free to do so. Certainly, we are free to disagree with evolution, and let there be no man that tries to force it on us. When people like modern-day evolutionists step into classrooms and try to play politician by removing the right of the Christian to make his or her opinion known, they are violating the rights of many. After all, if evolution has no weaknesses and creation is full of them, why not allow evolution to stand up to all other thoughts? In the classroom, many times I detect an aura of implant the theory and get out, kind of destroy the evidence. And some people are not fooled by that. I'm not saying that others have to believe what I believe, by any means. However, it is wrong for anyone, whether student or teacher, to be denied their rights to practice and defend their religious exercises. Countless times I've watched as teachers that I know... I'll stop there. I'm out of time.
Any questions? Ms. Knight?
When does critical thinking start in your educational process? When did critical thinking start in your educational process?
Well, I guess it would depend on how would you define critical thinking. Students are asked to think critically about things, you know, from the very beginning. At every level that we advance our methods of thinking, we're thinking critically in order to teach ourselves and learn new things.
Okay. So you would come to a science class already, or you should come to a science class already with the ability to critically analyze, to weigh the pros and cons of situations, to think out of the box, to develop additional points of view from what you have been taught up to that point, to synthesize and dissect information. So you would come to your science class with those skills already intact. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And the scientific method encourages that through analysis and considering strengths and weaknesses of everything.
Okay, thank you. And while he's leaving, may I say I appreciate his appearance here today.
Thank you.
Eric Hennen Hofer, followed by Sherry Teft.
It's Eric Hennenhafer, and no one ever gets it right, so I'm used to it. I'm an engineer, and I'm here today as an entrepreneur, a technology executive, and a business owner. And unfortunately, I'm one of the few business owners who's actually speaking out on this. I won't tell you my age, but I do have a couple patents. And I'm really here just to talk about two issues. The first issue is that this is a PR issue for business in Texas. The second one is these political games that we're playing right now are going to burn us all. So I'm going to start with the PR issue. Strengths and weaknesses, this is a term that marketing has attacked. After Dover, intelligent design didn't have a place to put all the materials, and this has all been rebranded under the strengths and weaknesses. You don't have to believe me when I say that. All you have to do is look on the web and see that press is following that. This is a toxic term. We cannot touch it. If we put it in our standards, we are adopting all of that, and we are bringing this battle here to Texas. Marketing is extremely powerful, and it explains all of this. If you look at what the oil industry did on global warming, if you look at what the tobacco industry did on basically pushing off their knowledge of cigarettes, we need to be very careful about these half-truths. Texas business has allocated over $500 million to promote business in Texas over the last few years. It's a huge amount of money. If we diminish even a little bit, if people worry about their kids' school education, or it's going to be hard to attract workers, that bill is going to go way up. Here's what happens when you pass this. This is from Topeka, Kansas. It says, the Kansas State Board of Education on Tuesday repealed science guidelines questioning evolution that has made the state an object of international ridicule. This is from the Fair and Balanced Channel News, Fox. Just imagine what regular media says about this. The second one is the political game that we're involved in now. History repeats. The thing we know when this issue hits is it causes a backlash in the electorate. The radical members, the right-wing members of the school boards get kicked off, and the coattails pull Democrats in. I've been talking to hundreds of people about this over the last 6 months, and I understand the right's viewpoint. That's the worldview, far right. The far left is looking at this as a massive opportunity. But with the legislation being so close, this could be the issue to tip it over. Now, some of you think, hey, I'm just a conspiracy theorist, and I thought this was totally crazy until I heard it multiple times because I'm not a politician. But we need to look at the experts that have been lined up. The rules say that we have 15 members, so there should be the potential for 7. And the officials have said there could be 7 people, but there are only 6 experts, which makes it evenly matched for scientists and people who are anti-evolution. I find it very disturbing that the 2 people who didn't put people on that board are Democrats. So they basically gave up the majority to perpetuate this debate.
Thank you.
That's pretty good.
Go ahead. And
yeah, I mean, okay.
You made us 2 points, yeah.
Let's wrap up with something fun then. The future of our kids and the reputation of Texas, we don't want to mess with. We all know this is Texas, after all.
Ms. Leo.
Yes, you said that if we put strengths and weaknesses in, we're going to be put in the same place as Dover. Actually,
yeah.
We've had strengths and weaknesses in our language well before Dover. And what happened, I believe, in the Dover case was they pulled evolution out and taught it differently or separately than what they were teaching other theories. That is basically our standard applies to all theories. We're treating evolution just like we would treat any other theory. We've never had a lawsuit. That happened well.
Do you have a question?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Are you aware that you said that if we put it in, it's already been in there. Are you aware of that?
So my point is a PR point. It's not about the science. The term strength and weakness has been rebranded. It doesn't mean what it used to mean. This is where the body of logic and knowledge is there. If you look on the Internet, you'll see the New York Times talking about strength and weakness being the new buzzword. By adopting it at this point, we are saying we are intentionally putting that in with a new meaning.
No, it's a meaning that has been applied.
I'm sorry. We need to ask questions. We can go on. It's
words
been around for 20 years.
Meaning.
He made his point. It's a PR. I think he's made his point.
Okay.
Ms. Dunbar.
So you're saying that this has become a PR issue and is driven and pushed by the media.
I'm saying from my viewpoint as a business owner and leader, this is classic PR. You have the Discovery Institute pumping $4 million into it. I've seen the most slick PR ever in these press releases coming out. This is the best money that media can buy to do this. This is not an accident.
Okay, but you just mentioned the New York Times. I wouldn't
yes.
imagine the New York Times. So you're talking about both sides. You're talking about media and public relations in general.
Yes. And all I'm saying is you don't have to believe what I'm saying is true. All you need to recognize is this term has been latched onto. There are over 500,000 web pages talking about strengths and weaknesses. This is a toxic term. We need to stay away from it.
So would it be your position then, as we as a board need to make our determinations on the basis of public relations and media driving our decision?
I'm saying that you need to be aware of all of Texas, that this board here needs to stick to education. And if you're going to start a culture war for all of Texas and line us all up for this, this is well beyond the scope of the Board of Education. Your charter is to provide better education for Texas.
Are you aware this culture war, this is not the first time this room has been packed for this issue. This
right,
culture war has been going on.
This is going on forever. This is why we don't want it.
You think it's going to go away just because we let the media and drive the decision?
I think that this group has a choice. You can either promote this up and make Texas be the next front on this battle, because we're looking for where it's going to be next, or you can say, we don't want it in Texas. We're going to stick to education.
Okay, but you realize it's a battle, and there are two sides of every issue in the battle, and there are people who feel strongly on either side.
Yes, but what we've been talking about here is people said repeatedly that they're not in it for the battle, that they want to do what's best for Texas students.
Absolutely.
And what's best for Texas students is basically keeping
yeah.
this away.
Okay, let's, Ms. Hardy.
In your opinion, then, the analyze and evaluate would be a less toxic, to use your term, toxic verbiage?
I don't actually have any comments on the wording. I think we need to look to the Texas Academy of Sciences and TAMIS, basically the groups of the experts in Texas. Both of those groups are against strengths and weaknesses. If we don't have the leading scientific educational institutions of Texas on our side, we have a problem. So if they endorse those, hey, great.
Thank you.
Mr. Allen.
Right. So strengths and weaknesses used to mean strengths and weaknesses. So what happened after the Dover case, intelligent design, you can no longer put this body of evidence, you know, gaps in the fossil record, all of these weaknesses under intelligent design, which is where it's been. So they've rebranded the books, and you need to basically put this somewhere. And the term everyone's latched onto is strengths and weaknesses because it plays excellent in the media. It's a very sensible thing. This is great PR. So we know that. We're aware of that. So, you know, when we use that term, we're saying we're bringing that right in front of us, and that's what we're going to fight about. It's not the same word that it was 10 years ago. And our scientists have, you know, we have to trust them. These are the experts. They drafted a standard. They recommended these words. You know, why can't we move on and just do what they ask? This is science.
Ms. Cargill?
Thanks. I'm just putting the word out. I'm still waiting for any examples or any data that shows that creation or intelligent design has been forced upon teachers to teach in the classroom. Still waiting for that. Haven't heard one example. You know, or another example of what you're talking about, that the language has changed. I haven't heard that. I think that is
question.
Anyway, so my question is, if anybody does have a specific example of where teachers are forced to teach creation or ID, let me know, or if anybody has a specific example of district training that is imposing that on teachers in our state, let me know.
Okay. The answer to the other one about another site for the changing of the meaning of the word, Wikipedia would be the best one. This is the fourth stage.
Okay.
You know, third was idea, the fourth is
thank you.
The battle there.
Do I have any other questions?
That's not my question.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Sherry Taft, followed by Eugenie Scott. Sherry Taft.
Oh, I think I can see over the podium. I was a bit worried. Sherry Taft, Masters of Education, LSSP. For 34 years, I've educated students and worked as a licensed specialist in school psychology. I'm here to speak for the adolescent brain. As an educational psychologist, my research focuses on how the brain learns and how to improve problem-solving, reasoning, and decision-making skills. Current research on the adolescent brain indicates that early adolescents begin to develop increased abstract thinking abilities and continue to develop and improve these thinking skills throughout their teenage years and into early adulthood. Use it or lose it is the adolescent brain mantra, and academic activities designed to promote active brain development are critical. Based upon this research, I conducted my own research on students transitioning from middle to high school by embedding critical thinking skills along with skill training into an 8th grade American history course. Comparing 9th grade failure rates in a suburban Texas high school, statistically significant results support the hypothesis that teaching adolescents how to improve their brain's ability to think abstractly directly impacts their academic performance. A key component of this research provided our teenagers with experiences to explore the content, analyze different perspectives, and practice with higher order thinking skills. These abstract thinking skills and experiences are the stuff of which the brain is made. I understand Texas is attempting to improve this level of abstract reasoning. Last year, I worked with the Texas High School to develop a test-taking program designed to teach 9th and 10th grade students, previously unsuccessful with reading tasks, abstract reading skills, and how to identify these thinking processes within a variety of critical thinking test questions. 89% of those students passed the English language arts test, with 6 receiving commended scores, and I can tell you we were very happy for those kids. This success further validates the need to provide our teenagers with educational experiences that offer their brain the food of an ever-increasing level of abstract reasoning. However, presenting only the strengths of a theory and not its weaknesses is like getting only the pros of an argument in a discussion. How can the brain evaluate with only one-sided information? This limitation corrodes the essence of abstract thinking and creates a brain with limited capacity for freedom of expression, a First Amendment right. Students need to figure it out and wrestle with theories in order to achieve our ultimate goal of critical thinking among independent learners. We want to create a generation that does not just simply accept an answer as true, but rather evaluates the information and reaches their own personal conclusions. And I applaud this board for listening to both the pros and the cons of this issue.
Good job.
Thank you.
On time.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, ma'am.
This is a procedural question. I just looked down the list and realized how many more people were waiting. I know in our rules it says 3 minutes each. Generally, would it help if they could reduce their comments to 2 minutes? Or since we published 3 minutes, we have to stick to 3 minutes.
No, we'll keep it 3 minutes. They've got it prepared. Like the last lady was to the penny. I mean, right to the second. Go ahead, Dr. Scott.
I'm Eugenie Scott, director of the National Center for Science Education in Oakland, California. The parents, scientists, and teachers belonging to NCSE support the teaching of evolution in the public schools. Thank you for letting me speak today about the science TEKS and specifically process skill C3A, a critical thinking standard. The proposed wording requires students to, quote, analyze and evaluate scientific explanations using empirical evidence, logical reasoning, and experimental and observational testing. This makes C3A a superior critical thinking standard, expressing clearly how scientists actually evaluate and test explanations. It clarifies for teachers the elements of critical inquiry: evidence, logical reasoning, and experimental and observational testing. And by abandoning the inaccurate strengths and weaknesses language, this phrasing does not encourage the singling out of evolution for special treatment, as occurred in 2003 when textbook publishers were threatened with having to introduce non-existent weaknesses of evolution. I have a copy of NCSE's Voices for Evolution for each of you, containing statements by science, education, and industry organizations attesting that evolution is central to science. You will find mainstream scientists and educators offer no support for teaching weaknesses of evolution. When claims are made that there are a list of weaknesses that should be taught, I suggest you begin by considering the sources. During the November 2008 board meeting, Mrs. Dunbar, relying on an article in the September 2008 newsletter of the Institute for Creation Research, suggested that the research of a Nobel laureate, Dr. Werner Arber, would provide weaknesses of evolution that could be studied by Texas students. I corresponded with Dr. Arber, who wrote me, quote, "I am neither a Darwin skeptic nor an intelligent design supporter, as is claimed in Bergman's article. I stand fully behind the neo-Darwinian theory of biological evolution." You have Dr. Arber's letter with my written testimony. This, of course, is only one of many examples of false and misleading information that emanates from creationist sources. If you are considering comparing the reliability of a creationist source to the National Academy of Sciences, there is no contest. If the science teaches require textbook publishers to include a lot of creationist-inspired nonsense, Texas students will be at a disadvantage. In this age of modular publishing, a publisher might well present an inferior Texas edition with phony weaknesses of evolution and a national edition containing accepted science. You'll be teaching the equivalent that Grant surrendered to Lee after the Civil War while everyone else in the country learns accurate history. I don't think you want to disadvantage Texas students in competing for science-related jobs. And think of how betrayed Texas students attending a Texas or out-of-state university will feel when they find out that their high school science classes were filled with misinformation. That's unfair to them. So please listen to the scientists who tell you to accept the current draft with pedagogically superior wording for the critical thinking standard C3A, and which avoids the potential to miseducate Texas students. And I finished on time.
Dr. Scott?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you give us an example or examples of the pseudoscience that we were talking about earlier? Several people brought up pseudoscience. I'd like to know some examples of that.
I think I can't speak for other people, and other people use the term pseudoscience. What I can tell you is that the information that is routinely presented by the ICR, the Discovery Institute, and other creationist organizations distorts science, does not present the view of science, especially the view of evolution, as it is understood by your scientists at the University of Texas and other Texas scientists.
Ms. Dunbar?
Yes. You stated that it gives us pedagogically superior language. Are you aware, Ms. Scott, that we as a board are prohibited from discussing pedagogy?
You still want to produce the best science standards you can.
Absolutely.
And these writing committees have revised that standard to make it much more accurate and pedagogically superior. I would encourage you to take their professional advice.
Additionally, when you brought up the article by Werner Arber, I would suggest that his teachings and his findings should be taught in the classroom without any preconceived ideas to where that leads. Would you object to that?
I think the scientific discoveries of Werner Arber are very sophisticated. They certainly support evolution. They do not question evolution. Remember what the job of a high school teacher
wait,
is.
My question was simply, you would have no objection to his findings, scientifically documented findings and mutations in that, to be taught in the classroom?
Not from a standpoint of accuracy. I think I would question whether high school students are capable of really absorbing and evaluating the kinds of high-level science he does.
So
remember that in the high school classroom, you get the basics.
So
you know, we're not talking about string theory in physics.
Well,
and
you've answered his question. Go ahead. Her question.
Well, I just wanted to make sure. So you do have a problem with that being included in the high school classroom?
Not because of accuracy, but because it's very high-level work that probably would take away from the presentation of more basic information.
And that his viewpoint is that there is no documentation as to the origin of life.
His viewpoint is that the scientific community does not, at this point, have a consensus on a natural origin of life.
Well,
and
actually, he doesn't talk about scientific consensus. He says, in contrast, there is so far neither satisfactory scientific knowledge nor theory on the origin and early evolution of life in our planet. Are you now going to take issue with the letter he sent you?
That's the same thing. Okay. I mean, there are many theories and working hypotheses and a lot of research going on exploring a number of avenues of how the first replicating structure developed. That is irrelevant to the conversation today that we're having, because the conversation we're having today is whether we should teach students without qualification the point of view of the scientific community, which is that living things had common ancestors.
So
that's what evolution is.
So your point is that we need to teach them the viewpoint of the scientific community, not observable, testable data that is in confirmation with the scientific process and theory. You think that that's the same thing? Is that your position?
I don't think that those two are in contradiction to each other. I think we should be teaching. I think we should be teaching evolution the way we teach it at the university level. We should be teaching the scientific consensus on this. The high school classroom is no place to fight the culture wars, and this, unfortunately, is what is happening in Texas and in Louisiana and many other states where this issue has disproportionately affected education.
Mr. Mercer, question.
Dr. Scott, thank you for being here. You're saying that there are non-existent weaknesses of evolution. There are no weaknesses to the theory of evolution.
Not in the sense that the term weaknesses is used in this rarefied environment. By weaknesses of evolution, the critics of evolution, the critics of the idea that living things had common ancestors, what you've been referring to as macroevolution, their idea of weaknesses really consists of going through the literature and pulling out at best anomalies that might question some detail of evolution, either about the pattern of evolution or the process of evolution, and then claiming that those anomalies, alleged anomalies, somehow question the whole issue of whether living things had common ancestors. This is not how science is done. And this is not a good instructional strategy for students.
What is a good definition of evolution then?
Evolution, biological evolution, is a three-part idea. The big idea, which is what we're concerned with here, is that living things have common ancestors. They have descended with modification from common ancestors. We also talk about the pattern of evolution, how the tree of life has branched through time. Lots of controversy about that. Are birds really descended from dinosaurs and so forth? We also talk about the processes of evolution. How important is natural selection versus other issues when it comes to explaining the tree of life, when it comes to explaining common ancestry?
But you see no weaknesses in the tree of life. You see no weaknesses. Again, we've gone several times that we all understand, believe, and we see every day what the layman's term, microevolution.
Mm-hmm.
But do we have proof of a bird, like the dino bird that was in National Geographic in the year 2000 that was later proven to be a fraud, or the Piltdown man, the missing link that's proven to be a fraud too, or perhaps the peppered moth theory or whatever. Do we have proof of one species going to another?
Yes, actually we do. You're talking about speciation, and we have lots of examples of speciation occurring. Speciation has to do with the change of one species to another, and we have lots of examples of that. We can show it in the laboratory. We can observe it in nature.
So we can prove, like Dr. Haeckel's drawings, that a salamander became a fish, became a pig, became a sheep.
You're talking about speciation. Haeckel's embryos, this is more of this, you know, inside baseball kind of stuff that I hate to take the time from other people to testify.
Well, no, I
Haeckel's
would argue
embryos,
that the question
but,
is
sir, I do have an answer for you.
Thank you.
The Haeckel's embryo canard about disproving evolution is nonsense. It's presented over and over in creationist literature. It has, even the person they quote as supposedly revealing the fraud of Haeckel's embryos, Richardson, an English scientist, has said, look, they're really misquoting me, much as Dr. Arbor was misquoted. They're really misquoting me. Here's really the story of Haeckel, and his findings are still accurate. Whether or not he drew some drawings more similar to the basic idea is there. The more recently you share a common ancestor, the more similar your embryos. And that's the take home of that.
but you believe you can prove a tree of life, and we all have a common ancestry.
Okay. She's already stated yes. Ms. Leo.
We're mainly discussing macroevolution, but there's been many scientists, many evolutionists, that are still not sure or going back to square one, as Steven Weinberg, I think, said last time he was here, on the origin of life. How do we get life from no life? What is wrong, and you even indicated that in your statement, what is wrong with a student saying, well, we don't know the answer to this. Here are the many possibilities, but we just don't have that answer yet scientifically. Maybe you'll be the next person that discovers that. What is wrong with that?
Nothing.
Because
and
that's
that is
where
what
we're
the
at. Where
and that is
we
what
got
the textbooks
no
say. The textbooks that you have approved and that you will be looking at in the future generally say that. They provide several working hypotheses about the origin of life and say we don't have a consensus yet. And that's accurate. But it's the job of science to try to explain natural phenomena using natural causes.
Okay.
As one of my philosopher friends says, to say nothing of God is not to say that God is nothing. The fact that you don't say, and one of these options is
okay,
God went poof,
you've answered her question.
Doesn't mean it's not science.
Anybody else have a question? Ms. Miller.
I'd like to thank you, Dr. Scott, for coming. And I'm very... probably sit and listen to you expand more with your vast knowledge. It's been in my opinion. Okay. My question is, I've got it off. Okay. I don't know. I've got it off. Since it's falling down to this issue of the terminology of weaknesses, assuming that this board will vote to add weaknesses, strength and weaknesses back in from some of the things we're hearing. What is your take on that? And do you feel that how do you see that falling out, in other words?
Well, I think it would be very unfortunate if the board did restore the strengths and weaknesses language. This is about textbooks. This is about 2 years from now, what will textbook publishers be required to put into textbooks in order to sell them in Texas? That's really what this is about. I have yet to meet a textbook editor who wants to produce a bad book. And what I think will happen from the few editors I've spoken to is that they'll produce a Texas edition that'll have any kind of nonsense you want in it because they want to sell books in Texas. This is a big market. But students in other states are not going to be inflicted with a lot of fake weaknesses of evolution like Haeckel's embryos or these other kinds of things that keep being brought up over and over. And I think that would be very detrimental to Texas students. And I would hope that the board would listen to the scientific and educational expertise and remain with the standards with standards C3A as it is written today.
My other last question is, how do you respond to this, academic freedom concept, in other words, that seems to be moving through the legislature and other legislators?
There's two contexts for that. In the context of our discussion here, there has been the question raised that if we don't have strengths and weaknesses language in the standards, somehow students will lose the ability to question teachers.
Yes.
That just seems a non sequitur. I can't see how that's related whatsoever. Teachers have a great deal of freedom within a class to bring up issues, to answer student questions. Students have a lot of freedom in the class to question the material in the book, and they will continue to do that, I think, as any teacher will attest. At the same time, the idea that somehow if you are not teaching bad science in the name of academic freedom, you are disadvantaging students is ludicrous. Students are disadvantaged if they are taught material that is not accurate and that does not reflect the scientific consensus. We're talking about high school students here. If the authors of Explore Evolution or the other creationist weaknesses of evolution productions want to make their case to the scientific community that they have legitimate arguments against evolution, let them come and talk to people like Professor De Lausanne. Let them come and talk to people at the University of Texas who are scientists who can debate these issues with them. Don't balance this culture war on the back of high school students. This is an inappropriate place for that. If the criticisms of evolution become established science, fine. That's great. It'll trickle down into high school.
Doctor, under the current proposal by the work group, it states that the scientific processes, it says the student uses critical thinking, scientific reasoning, and problem solving to make informed decisions within and outside the classroom. The student is expected to analyze and evaluate scientific explanations using empirical evidence, logical reasoning, and experimental and observational testing. Does that in any way limit or restrain academic freedom within the classroom?
I can't see that it restrains it in any way.
Thank you.
Mr. Allen.
Dr. Scott, and I was trying to come behind Ms. Miller, because the terms or the words strengths and weaknesses, why are they so problematic when they've never been opposed before?
The reason why they have never been opposed is because the textbooks have not included the creationist-inspired, quote, weaknesses of evolution in your textbooks. In the 2003 textbook controversy, there was a very strong effort made to try to get these materials introduced into the textbooks, and it failed. There were some tiny little cosmetic changes which were spun as great victories, but really the books were virtually unchanged. I think that if you start requiring textbook publishers to include this kind of bad science, you're going to have problems.
Ms. Knight?
Dr. Scott, can I assume that you have been around long enough to follow the strength and weakness arguments of old as it has evolved over a time? And have you seen a different attachment to the meaning of the word strength and weaknesses from 1997 to now?
I think that the term, the phrase strengths and weaknesses, has been seized by especially the Discovery Institute as a slogan. The first incident, by the way, of strengths and weaknesses comes in terms of my research from the 1991 proclamation on seventh grade life science. It sort of bubbled along without causing much problem because, of course, the textbooks don't have this information. And it is true, perhaps unfortunately, that the textbook is the curriculum in most classes, so this material is not being taught. Since the advent of the Discovery Institute and their activity on the anti-evolution front, the phrase strengths and weaknesses that originated here in Texas has been spread nationally as a slogan to try to bring creationism in through the back door, so to speak. Creationists speak regularly of what they call the two-model approach, which is there is either special creation or there is evolution. If you can just disprove evolution, creation...
Can you just speak to the strengths and weaknesses question and if it's changed
and
over time?
And therefore, strengths and weaknesses are a way of attacking evolution, of disproving evolution, of creating doubt in a student's mind about evolution so that the student will... they believe, probably accurately, will, in the same dichotomous thinking that they exhibit, believe that, well, then, therefore, God specially created everything and evolution is junk science.
My other question would be, and Anita, please listen, because I may ask it of you when your time comes. As you have followed this debate about strengths and weaknesses, are you aware of any other states that have the strengths and weaknesses language that originated out of Texas in their curriculum standards?
Minnesota has that wording, and there have been efforts to try to get strengths and weaknesses a language into other states as well. I think West Virginia was an effort, but I believe that it did not pass. I can get you that information, school board member. Knight. I just don't have it in the tip of my frontal lobe, so to speak. But we do have a lot of documentation of this at the National Center for Science Education.
Thank you.
Mr. Mercer, is it quick? Because
yes.
We need to have other testifiers, please.
Just real quick, I understand now the question is, you agree that, as a doctor before from UT Austin suggested, that the strengths and weaknesses has not been a problem in the last 20 years, but you're concerned about in the future.
Correct. I think it has not been a problem because it has not been in the textbooks, so therefore it hasn't gotten into the classroom in a systematic way.
Are you aware that in the last 20 years we have not had a section on intelligent design or creationism, and there is no amendment right now in the TEKS or no amendment to be proposed to include intelligent design or creationism?
That's correct. What you are discussing now is whether you will teach the denigration of evolution, which is a long-time creationist strategy to promote creationism through the back door.
One final question with a follow-on. Had there ever been any evidence of evolutionary fraud?
Of course.
Should we be allowed to teach that as examples of bad science?
Certainly. Just like you can teach examples of political chicanery.
Thank you.
I want to thank you, Ms. Scott. I'd just like to make one just very quick statement.
No, that wasn't an editorial comment. I please don't misunderstand.
No. The State Board, if you go back and listen to the actual adoption of textbooks back in 97 and 2003, the Board did rule that they did have the weaknesses. That was the debate. Even Kenneth Miller came and spoke to the Board in 1997. Will Davis asked him specifically, are the weaknesses in the textbooks? Kenneth Miller, Dr. Miller said, yes, they are. And so the Board voted for the weaknesses of evolution. People disagree on what a weakness of evolution is.
Precisely.
Who's next?
Thank you.
C. Stephen McDaniel, followed by Cindy Cruz. C. Stephen McDaniel.
Mr. Chairman, while he's coming, could you tell us who Kenneth Miller is?
Dr. Miller's author of one of the textbooks. He's a very well-known intelligent design speaker. He's written two books that I've read, and I've read his textbook. We have his textbook adopted. It's one of the most popular books in Texas right now. He's from Brown University, and he's very persuasive. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for having me, members of the board. I apologize for my voice. I was actually able to witness the inauguration of Mr. Obama yesterday, and I'm afraid the Washington weather took its toll on me, and I hope I can finish. It's worth every cough and sneeze, I might tell you. My name is Steve McDaniel, and I am an industrialist in the state of Texas in the bio-based biotechnology industry. My companies contribute millions of dollars to the state economy each year, and in particular, directly to state universities such as Texas A&M University, where we support a large research effort. I can also tell you that one of my companies, Reactive Surfaces, brought some level of distinction to science in Texas this last year when we were awarded the 2008 American Coatings Award for the most innovative technology in the coatings industry, something we're very proud about. I bring to you today a petition that I'm circulating. It's signed to some degree. Amongst bio-based industry industrialists in the state of Texas, which I think will probably describe many of our concerns as industrialists in the actions that this board may take. I'm going to read this, which I don't normally like to do, but in my voice situation, I think I will. The teaching of 21st century science in Texas public schools is absolutely critical to Texas technology-based industry. As businessmen and women and leaders in those industries, we urge that the State Board of Education, the Texas Legislature, and the Office of the Governor take steps to ensure that no regulatory, administrative, or executive action weakens scientific education in Texas. Texas cannot afford, ladies and gentlemen, to have a reputation as a state whose pool of scientifically trained employees has been educated in a system that allows the teaching of non-scientific concepts such as creationism or intelligent design as alternatives to the fact-based, scientifically sound, and virtually universally accepted theory of evolution. Now, why? Why? It's simple. It's pragmatic. There is little incentive for Texas industry to hire technical and scientific employees that may have to be retrained as to scientific principles when there are ample, well-qualified scientific personnel who do not have this deficit in their training, who we can hire easily from outside the state of Texas. As leaders of science-based industry in Texas, we're committed to growing technology-based industry in Texas. Texas schools must be committed equally to preparing 21st century technicians and scientists from which our industries can hire in order to keep us competitive in a world economy. As first steps, and I emphasize first steps, in bringing Texas scientific teaching into the 21st century, we urge that the State Board of Education not include any language in the regulatory or administrative records, codes, and laws that require or promote the teaching of creationism or intelligent designs as an alternative to the theory of evolution in Texas public school science classes, and we urge that the State Boards of Education not promote nor adopt science textbooks that teach any such alternative.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Leo.
Which board member is trying to promote the teaching of creationism or intelligent design as the alternative to the theory of evolution? Which board member would that be?
I have to be honest with you and tell you that I'm not as well schooled as most of these people in here and the machinations of this board. I don't even know any of you individually.
Okay, which board member that, so, I mean, you're making the allegation. Which board
member?
No,
ma'am, I'm not making any allegation. I'm merely stating a pragmatic result of what I believe would be the result of an administrative action. I'm not making any allegations at all.
All right. Which board member then, do you have indication?
Ma'am, I don't even know the names. I don't know the names of the board.
Well, let her ask the question, please.
Well, I'm trying. Okay, sure.
Which board member or procedure, policy, or amendment, or where have you read that any of the 15 board members are trying to remove the theory of evolution from Texas public schools to be taught?
That are trying to remove the teaching of the theory of evolution?
Well, you said, yeah, or an alternative to the theory of evolution. Which, do you believe that there are members of this board that don't want the theory of evolution taught in Texas?
I don't know.
To my knowledge, there is none.
Okay. You know more than I do.
Thank you.
Cindy Cruz, followed by Paul Lively.
Mr. Chairman, while they're coming, I have a procedural question.
Yes.
Would you look later, SBOE 9 regarding oral testimony to the committee, and explain to me why the time that we're asking questions is not being counted against the time for speakers to speak?
Mm-hmm.
Not now. Just
okay,
I need
go
to
ahead.
Have a discussion with you.
Members of the board, I come today as a concerned parent and citizen. I strongly believe, as other Americans, that the strengths and weaknesses of biology theory should be examined and understood by students. A 2006 Zogby poll demonstrated that 69% of Americans want evidence for and against the theory of evolution taught in schools. Charles Darwin once wrote, "A fair result can be attained by only fully stating and balancing the facts of both sides of each equation." He understood the need to have the freedom to investigate the strengths and weaknesses of each scientific question we encounter. By forbidding students the freedom to explore the strengths and weaknesses, we are restricting the knowledge and potential of our children. Making the proposed changes to the TEKS requirements will take this freedom away from the children. And one of our...
Whoa. That was a mistake. Keep going.
Thank you. Making the proposed changes in the TEKS requirement will take this freedom away from students of Texas in one of the most important sectors of our society, science. Some scientists argue there are no weaknesses to the evolution theory, only areas that are not yet discovered. Richard Dawkins recently admitted we haven't figured it all out. At one time, we hadn't figured out that the world was round, but suppose if Christopher Columbus had not used critical thinking toward the flat earth theory, where would we be today? The knowledge our children gain in public schools dictates the future of our families, our state, our nation, and even our civilization. Science is meant to be an honest quest for truth and knowledge. However, some scientists wish to impose their own bias at the risk of restraining the minds of our students. If we limit our students from a full understanding of scientific theories, we are handicapping them for future discoveries. Rational debate is healthy and necessary for scientific discoveries. My desire to have the biology teachers continue to teach strengths and weaknesses is a result of a belief in the integrity of science and the scientific process. I am not proposing that the theory of evolution be removed from the Texas science curriculum, but simply that its strengths and weaknesses are allowed to be fully investigated. If the weaknesses are deliberately omitted from the biology requirements, our students would be censored in a field where censorship is the most dangerous of all enemies. The proposed changes to the TEKS are suppressing the freedom of honest inquiry, investigation, and examination. Without the freedom to learn the strengths and weaknesses of scientific theories, education becomes indoctrination. I ask you to decide what is best for science, for the students of Texas, by voting against the proposed changes to remove strengths and weaknesses in the TEKS. I want to thank you for your time in considering this divisive issue.
Thank you. Thank you.
Paul Lively, followed by Peter Johnston.
Good morning. My name is Paul Barry Lively. I live in Texas, in Houston, Texas, all my life, except for 4 years in Sicily with the United States Navy and a recent tour to Iraq. I returned 8 months ago. I hold a Bachelor of Science from the University of Houston, and I'm pursuing a Master of Arts from Liberty University. I continue to serve in the Navy, and I'm a parent of 3 children, a 12-year-old 7th grader who's here with me today, and a 4-year-old son and a 1-year-old daughter who was born while I was in Iraq, and I'm here today on their behalf. The current 1998 science TEKS sets forth a requirement that the student is expected to analyze, review, and critique scientific explanations, including hypotheses and theories as to their strengths and weaknesses using scientific evidence and information. I would like to emphasize the destructive effects of the removing of these terms, strengths and weaknesses, from this language. This language sets forth a requirement that guides both the student and the textbook author. In order for a textbook to facilitate this requirement of analysis and scrutiny, the author must include all evidence and information available for the subject matter. Removing these terms would squelch academic freedom of textbooks, authors, to freely address all available information, whether positive or negative, and further require that they only include the interpretations of a single view. If we are making an attempt to encourage academic freedom here, then this change is not going to accomplish that. Consider the theory of evolution. Textbooks today treat it as more than a theory, even though its evidence has been found to be stained with half-truths, deception, and hoaxes, as evidenced by the testimony of a PhD here today. Some consider it to be sound as the law of gravity. Darwin evolution is not a proven fact. When truthfully considered, considering all the evidence, it is easy to conclude that this theory is clouded with many weaknesses. Requiring the inclusion of both strengths and weaknesses of such theories into textbooks will foster thorough evaluation and will prevent scholarly bias and further allow students to come to their own informed conclusions. Censorship and bias should be avoided at all costs and must not be allowed to exist in the textbooks used to teach our children. When considering both strengths and weaknesses in theory, students are allowed to develop a framework about the facts. If the textbooks only present a single interpretation of the data, such as with evolution, and limit exposure to the facts, then our children are prevented from ever coming to know objective truth and are not allowed to develop their own informed conclusions. Your proposal defines the term science as the use of evidence to construct testable explanations and predictions of natural phenomena, as well as the knowledge generated through the process. One request I make here today is that you help design a learning environment for Texas students that will allow them to do exactly what your definition of science illustrates. Make it a requirement that our textbooks include all of the available evidence, both strengths and weaknesses, about the scientific theories. All that are available. Let them see that theories do in fact have weaknesses, and testing and questioning related hypotheses is the right thing to do and a part of the scientific method. Your proposal states that students are expected to identify and explain a problem in his or her own words. Ladies and gentlemen, today I appreciate this opportunity to identify a problem I see with your proposal to remove the term strength and weaknesses. The task at hand now is for you to recognize this proposed change causes many unacceptable problems for all of us here. My request today is that you prevent the propagation of half-truths, bias, and censorship, and stand up for academic freedom. Thank you. I worked on that a lot. Any questions? Ms. Dunbar.
Hey, I know we're not supposed to make comments, but I just want to thank you for your service. And in light of protecting freedoms, how strongly do you feel that this can impact academic freedom within the classroom for our students by removing this language?
I'm glad you asked me that because I have four friends of mine that are teachers. One of them is the principal of my son's middle school. He says he's told not to do it and to only observe those things that are in the textbook. Karen, a friend of mine, Texas A&M University, is afraid. She said she was afraid to do it for many years, and she and I discussed this a lot. And she subsequently is no longer a teacher. She was a fantastic teacher, in my humble opinion. Curtis, a friend of mine that I work with, she's also afraid. She moves to Texas and finds another job. A former pastor of ours was a teacher. He was told vehemently to stop discussing these things, even though the students were asking the questions. He was told not to facilitate the answers to those questions because it was a discussion that was not in the textbook. So further to answer your question, I would think that the inclusion of a weakness of a theory, which is a part of the scientific method, would foster discussion. And also, if we make a requirement that strengths and weaknesses be included, then that governs what is put in the textbooks, and it frees and equips the teachers to actually be able to discuss those without having permission from a principal or a board of director or a board of educational board. It equips the teachers and the students. We all discuss here about how the students can ask questions. They're free to ask questions, but the teachers are afraid to even discuss it. So that squelches the child's ability to ask questions. So that answers your question.
And we've heard testimony today that taking that language out won't in any way impede the ability for the discussions to continue. But it's been your experience that even with the language in, it's been difficult. So taking it out would further limit any active discourse within the classroom.
Yes, and I believe it's ridiculous for us to sit in this room and defend an unsupported, we say weaknesses. What is a weakness? It's lack of support. We had a PhD stand right here and tell us that there is no evidence to support macroevolution, and we had one that comes up here and says that there is. Folks, that's a weakness. It needs to be discussed in the class. We need to tell our kids that this is not a fact. It's not like the law of gravity. Jump up and down. Anybody here not believe in the law of gravity? Jump up and down, you'll land on the ground. Okay, but you have no evidence of macroevolution, yet we walk around and talk about it like it is gospel truth, and it is not. But yet we stand up in front of these classrooms and tell our kids that. That's a lie. We're lying to our kids. And then we're calling it, we're supporting it. And you know, can I ask a question about this? May I? Why do you think it is that we support such a theory that has no evidence? What do we gain from that? What is it that the people that support evolution are gaining from supporting something that has no evidence?
Okay.
My question,
I'm sorry.
I'm asking that to you. I'd like you to answer it.
Mr. Augusto.
I won't answer that question. Thank you for testifying. I do appreciate your opinion. But, you know, I just have a couple questions and just, you know, notating. I know we have AP courses that, if I'm correct, don't have TEKS, and we have biology courses, you know, with can you hear me?
More, sir.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was mentioning that the AP courses don't have TEKS. We have strengths and weaknesses currently that have been gone through several decades. Your position here is saying that, you know, this debate, on strengths and weaknesses should be done in the classroom, whereas at this level, whereas we have biologists who study, ponder, deliberate the patterns, and these are the experts in the fields. Your position is the fact that this should be done at a classroom level, that the debate on theory alone should be done, whereas the universities and don't even have the strengths and weaknesses, or you don't even care about what we have as far as these subjects. So I guess my question is, you feel that this should be it should be debated at this level for the students to debate on these theories.
No, I don't believe that a classroom is a place for a debate unless you're in debate. If you're in a classroom and a teacher standing up in front of a class and instructing someone from the content of a textbook, then I believe that if there is more than one possibility to how or the origin of man came to be, or how we transfer from one species to another, or how we change within our own species, or how one stronger of a group dies off or lives on and another one dies off. If we have theories that support what we're trying to teach in a class and there are alternatives to that, then the teacher should be allowed and equipped to open her or his mouth up to suggest such a thing to the students, that there are alternatives to what is stated as the only way. That's the way evolution is brought up in classes today.
Well, that contradicts, Mr. Vice Chair.
One more question.
I apologize.
It contradicts this statement, sir. It contradicts the hard work of these work groups and the 1,500 scientists around the state, the associations that might contradict that basically on the fact that their recommendation on the 3 to 4 years work that they've done to produce a document that would represent what these experts in the field believe that might be true as far as what the critical thinking and the academic freedom of a child that to have to eliminate these strengths and weaknesses it scientifically it doesn't make sense.
Well, can I address that?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
The scientists that you're talking about, the experts, I don't know if anybody, there may be many people know this, but if I'm a paleontologist and I go find something in the ground, I can bring it back to my office, put it in a glass case, put it in a safe, and hide it from everybody. And anything that you say of it as you write a paper for your PhD level course, I'm only going to let you see the molds of it. Because you can't see the real thing because I dictate what you say about it. And if you say something that says, no, you know, that's not 4 million years old, that's not 400 million years old, that's 5,000 years old, you say, hey, you know what? The person that finds it has the option to squelch that and not let that out to the public. Then we end up with things like pig's teeth that are ground down that molds are made of. Those are the experts that put these things up. And then you have things like dino bird that comes out and it's a fraud. That was an expert that did that. You have peppered moths that say that they hang out on the tree. And because of the pollution around them, they changed. And they, you know what? Those moths don't even hang out on trees. They glued them to a tree. That's an expert that did that. Then you've got Java Man who found a skull cap of a prehistoric man that was several feet down in the ground. And then 31 scientists from Germany went and dug in the same place. They had to dig through 45 feet of lava rock to get to the area where he said it was, and he didn't dig there. Those are the experts that you're talking about that we set up as experts in our schools and say, this is founded. You know what? I'd like to see one of these things be excavated out of our text and say that this is no longer a truth. I want the teachers to be equipped to stand up in front of my seventh grader and say, you know what, Zach? This evolution is one possibility. It's not been proven. There's not evidence. These are the things that come up that were found to be a fraud. The possibilities are these others.
Did we get an answer? Because I think we got another question.
One comment. And those aren't the questions I'm looking for. And those aren't the experts I'm worried about. After you finish your speech, you're going to turn around because those are the experts I'm talking about. And they're here. They've worked enough. And I think their academic criteria is justifiable to answer those questions that you just
said. Yes, sir, and I'm an expert in what I want you to be teaching my kids.
Let's see if we can get another question. Ms. Knight?
Yes. Would you think that under the scenario you described, with the strength and weaknesses language, that it was more a professional development issue as opposed to what was in the TEEK, and would it be a professional development even if the strength and weakness language is left out of the TEEK?
With that language in the TEEK, we missed an opportunity. When we articulated to textbook authors what to put in those textbooks, we articulated a requirement that says the student is required to do these things. And those things included the idea that the theories that we were bringing to their attention and teaching them about had strengths that were supported and weaknesses that had weak or no support. With that in the language in the TEEKS, we ended up with the textbooks that we have today that do not speak of alternatives and other possibilities. We missed the mark on that. Taking it out is one step further away from that. We need to leave it into the requirement and possibly consider other texts that will equip those authors to add more information about the alternatives. And I don't call that bad science. That's my stance on it. Does that answer your question? I'm sorry. Does that answer? I'm sorry. My apologies.
All right. Any other members? Thank you very much.